From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kaharski.
Second half of the show is here. Glad you're with us. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue online, edleysbbq.com. And you can download the Edley's app for all of their great menu items. Plus, you can place your curbside pickup order, get phone number information, and much more to their three locations, 12 Southeast Nashville and in Sylvan Park. Also, check out Poncho and Lefty's in Sylvan Park for tacos, tequila, and beer. Crew's all here today alongside Chad Withrow and Paul Kaharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Some news from Philly with the Eagles, and I wonder how much this catches on across the league. According to Tim McManus, Eagles coaches and essential staff will undergo a mandatory quarantine in Philadelphia area before being tested for COVID-19 in advance of camp. So they're going to quarantine ahead of even being tested before being approved to go to camp. They will need to be in Philadelphia by July 10th, and they're scheduled to be tested on the 17th. So they're quarantining on the 10th, waiting a week. They'll take a test, test results come back, and then you start camp a week or so after that. So they're reporting early, and I wonder how many other teams tried to pull this off.
It will be curious to see if this is now the standard moving forward for teams across the league, or if the Eagles will just be an outlier with this, because definitely changes the schedule of arrival and everything else to go with camp. But is this just something being overly precautious, or will this be what the rest of the league will be attempting to do as they come back to camp this month?
Well, isn't the 7 somewhat random? The 7 days as opposed to 14? I mean, if you have a negative test at the end of it, it's moot, I suppose. But if you really want to quarantine to assure things, the number's 14, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's referring to the first test. The first test will take place on the 17th. Camp doesn't start on the 18th.
Yeah.
So I mean, you have well more than 14 days before camp starts. By the time they report on the 10th.
Just the thing is, I mean, I think too many people outside anyway, right, think they quarantine for that 7, they take the test, and, you know, maybe they quarantine for another 7 and they take the test. But then as soon as you're around a bunch of players who've come from everywhere else, the quarantines doesn't mean anything anymore, right? As soon as you're in contact with or around 90 players who've come from 90 different places, the fact that you have been quarantined for 14 days is moot. You know, as soon as you stop at a gas station to pump gas, it's moot technically, right? So you're doing the best
for every American.
Right. Yeah. So I'm saying, though, that sounds, it sounds good that you're doing it, but as soon as you break the chain of the isolation, it doesn't mean anything anymore. So, you know, to a degree, it serves a purpose up until you get together with the team. And then as soon as you get together with the team, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, I think what it's doing is it's trying to prevent a massive spread of the virus from the get-go. You know, you kind of know where you stand going into camp. Guys are going to test positive. People are going to be shocked, and it's going to be a big headline. Players will test positive when these tests go out. That's just how it's going to be. We're seeing it in every league, and it's a big scrolling marquee at the bottom.
It's a representative of the country.
Well, and they, in large part, these players don't even show symptoms. And if they do, it's for a couple of days. They'll self-isolate for 14 days, be retested throughout this process. And eventually the thought is they're going to rejoin the locker room. So, I do think that they're just trying to get ahead of it to see where they stand roster wise before, you know, you have 2 days of practice and then you're shut down.
Yeah. I think the real question that we haven't discussed and we don't know, is if you have it And then you go quarantine for 14 days and you've tested negative and everything and you're now cleared to come back. How long does it take you to be fit to play again? What have you lost during your time away? I'm sure it's a case by case basis. If you're asymptomatic and you can work out, you're cleared to work out after a couple of days, you're doing what you can to stay football fit while you're away. But what are you allowed to do while you're away if you're asymptomatic? And then how long after you come back does the fitness staff, the sports medicine staff, think it takes before they would put you back into full go practices, and how long before coaches would put you back in the lineup? That's my big question, right? So yeah, what's the 2 weeks turn into in terms of a football absence?
Yeah, it could be longer. But, you know, in some cases, like Ezekiel Elliott's going to be ready to go because he's already had COVID-19.
Right. Well, it was a while ago. What's the
well,
football
again,
absence?
Paul, you keep saying it's a while ago. If you have COVID-19, we talked to Dr. Schaffner yesterday. Zero people have gotten it twice.
No, but I'm saying,
months.
I was saying Ezekiel Elliott's 2 weeks plus a lot of time.
Right.
Will have passed for him to be back into football shape and ready to go.
I'm saying he's good to go because he's already had it.
Yeah, he's good to go. But I'm saying if your 2 weeks takes place during training camp, how much additional time do the football medical people think you need? And then how much time do the coaches think you need? And then if it's an Isaiah Wilson, Dennis Kelly thing, you know, how good has the other guy done while you're gone? How well has the other guy done while you're gone? And how much does that create a thing? You know, if you're Ryan Tannehill, we know you're getting back into the lineup as fast as you can. If you're Derrick Henry, you're getting back into the lineup as fast as you can. If you're Nate Davis and somebody's played well in your absence, what, you know, does that create a thing? Are you automatically back in the lineup? Or if your replacement, Jamil Douglas, has done relatively well in your absence, are there now questions of do you change right back or do you stick with something that's been working while that guy's been out?
I think that would that's easily answered by how a team would treat a normal injury that would keep you out for a couple of weeks. If the player comes back and the player who replaced him is playing really well, chances are you're not going to push that player back in the lineup. You're going to say, "No, we're going to give you some extra time here to make sure you're ready to return."
Right.
If the player replacement's not playing very well, you need that guy back.
Yeah, and what's the quality of the replacement is the question.
Which goes back to
right tackle, you've got a viable.
It goes back to my overall question that the backup quarterback situation has never been more important. Because it will absolutely cripple you. And you can argue it cripples you across the league if your starter goes down anyway. But in this particular instance where it's a virus that could keep you out multiple weeks and will keep you out multiple weeks just in the 14 days, that's a detriment to your entire season.
Never been more important and never been more of an unknown with what the Tennessee Titans have on their roster right now. Not a good time for those two things to coincide. And I'm not saying Blaine Gabbert or Matt Castle would have given you a better alternative either. In 3 of the last 4 years, 5 of the last 6 years,
right,
you would have been in a bad position. You know,
yes.
Last year, you would have been in a good position at the start. But quite frankly, if Mariota was your alternative, I don't know that you would have been in great shape either. You would have been in better shape, but not great shape.
Coming up, Stephen Godfrey's going to join us. Time to talk some college football headlines, return to play, and testing across the college football landscape.
Something I'll be excited to our listeners to the north and those locally that support the Kentucky Wildcats. Stephen Godfrey is going to tell us why Kentucky football is the best college football coaching job in America. He wrote about it, and he'll explain.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue and Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. Chad, I know you're hungry right now. If you had your choice of all of these menu options, where would you be headed?
I would be headed to, man, this is a difficult decision to, usually I have such a quick response, Hutton, but both sound so great. I'm just going to flip a coin right now and say, let's go with Edley's.
Edley's. Okay, you surprised me. I had Poncho pulled up here. Okay. Edley's, half rack of ribs available for dinner and weekends. You're going to have more than enough food, even for a with row. You get two sides and cornbread with that. The wings platter. I always throw this your way because I'm curious if you're into the wings today. Eight wings, tossing your choice of everything, or the brisket sandwich.
Hutton, you had me a brisket sandwich. Brisket sandwich is all I needed to hear. Tell me more about it, please. Tell me more. Get me even more. Get me even hungrier on this Thursday.
Oh well, only Edley's has this tender, juicy brisket that's delicious. You've got to try it out. You can do that. The three locations. 12 South, East Nashville, and in Sylvan Park.
See, I don't know why you want to get bread involved in this equation. If you eat a brisket sandwich, you're taking up room in your stomach with non-brisket. I think David Reed would probably join me in this. Take away the bread and eat more brisket. Just get
see,
the
David
brisket.
Reed's favorite thing at Edley's is the Tuck Special, which does include bread. So he's also okay with the bread.
But you know what else he likes at Edley's? The floor brisket.
Yes.
Which is a special order.
I've witnessed that. I've also seen him order the smoker sampler, which it says it feeds four, and I've seen him eat everything on the plate. You choose.
Are you serious?
The whole thing. Three smoked meats, and then four large sides comes with the smoker sampler.
That's impressive.
It's David Reed. Also
Stephen
impressive.
Godfrey is Stephen Godfrey should have eaten that rather than his dumb McDonald's challenge.
I've had a Tuck Special before, and you better clear the schedule afterwards. I enjoy the Tuck Special. I know they look, they are a sponsor. I'm not saying bad things. I live near Nedley's. They're lovely people. I'm just saying, if you eat the Tuck Special, like, don't lead a meeting an hour later.
Yeah, it's a heavy lunch, is what you're saying. Like, yeah, you right. really need to have a light afternoon yeah. schedule if you go with the Tuck Special.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Godfrey, I really enjoyed your piece at Banner Society about Kentucky being the best job in America and best job in college football, I should say. Yes. And I think people hear that and they're probably thinking, what, Kentucky? A team that hasn't even been to Atlanta and won the SEC East? Can you explain the rationale as to why Mark Stoops has the best job in the country?
Yes, because as we all get older in life, we start thinking about things in a different way, and quality of life is a very important factor when you're considering employment, is it not, right? How things are going to be day to day, right? Not just how much money can I make and how competitive can I be. And so this is not my idea. This is the kind of stuff that I get from talking to a lot of coaches in a very, very casual, off-the-record way. This used to be given to North Carolina. Mm. Like 10 to 12 years ago, people used to say, go to North Carolina. It's a beautiful town, Chapel Hill. They're in the ACC. They have a relative expectation. You are never going to have to bother with the top end, right? Because UNC, just like Kentucky, is a basketball brand. Because money that Mark Stoops is making right now. And also, I wrote about this in the piece, every year that Mark Stoops wins seven games, that's it. That includes the bowl. So it could just be seven in a season. His contract automatically rolls over as it creeps towards north of $5 million annually. With, I want to say, it's in the story, three-fourths or two-thirds of that guaranteed. That's about as safe and consistent and realistic a coaching deal as I've ever seen in the Power Five.
Well, Paul, your thoughts?
It sounds cushy. The one thing that I think when you say Kentucky, and I've not been there, I've just seen it on TV. I picture the stadium and it turns me off. It's a major turn on.
You mean Kroger Field doesn't scream college football pageantry and tradition?
Yeah.
A corporate sponsor on
it's
the, on
in the
stadium?
Con. It's in the con column, but you can win me over with the contract, I guess.
It's the contract. It's the fact that you do get to recruit in the Southeastern Conference. I also wrote about this in the piece. And there is a very measurable difference. You know, that gets blown out of proportion a lot, usually by the SEC and some stupid ad campaign. But I've had countless coaches say, hey, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Florida or if you're Alabama or whatever. if you have the SEC logo and you're not Vanderbilt and you go into one of these high schools, there's an automatic recognition that, you know what, you may not be the SEC champion, but if I play for you, I will have the largest stage possible and the highest percentage chance of going to the NFL.
So, Godfrey, what great quote that you have, and this is from an SEC assistant. Have you ever seen Mark's contract? Mark has the best bleeping deal in the country. That would be one reason to stay at Kentucky and not go to Florida State. Let's get into the Florida State side of this.
Yeah.
How good of a job is Florida State really? Because there are limitations there. There are problems. There's also a lot of competition in that state for the top talent. So has Florida State fallen off as a job since Bobby Bowden was the coach there, or are they still one of the elite college football jobs in the country?
I think in college football, we often like to get mutually exclusive, and we say this is right and this is wrong. So when Texas A&M courted Jimbo and we had to make a referendum on who's right there, was Jimbo right or was Florida State right to move on? I think the answer might be yes to both and no to both. And what I'm trying to say is Jimbo's contract overinflated? Yes. Obviously, some news broke about him today. He's not a perfect man. Let's just leave it at that. However, Jimbo made legitimate criticism but spoke them out. I mean, he went into the press talking about some of the shortcomings that Florida State had in terms of resources and facilities. Now, I want to be really clear when I say that. We're not talking about a mid-major. We're not talking about a program that doesn't exist on the national scale. This is a program that thinks it is Notre Dame, Alabama, USC, et cetera, but they don't spend and build and create that environment. So I'm not telling everyone to build a lot or spend a lot, but if you're Florida State and you project this image, you have to actually carry through on that. And I think they've fallen a lot further behind than people realize.
So I love how you put it, Godfrey, with the in college football that there's either, you know, right or wrong a lot of times with the fans. What's right or wrong in this instance? Kansas State, they get a bunch of positive COVID-19 tests. They just send all the athletes back home. Yeah. Clemson's got, 37 football players alone who have tested positive. Workouts continue. They're going on. They're sending those players to quarantine, but they're going to continue workouts. Then you have a place like Georgia who just flat out said, we're not going to report the numbers. We're not going to tell you who's tested positive. We're not going to tell you what's happening because we don't want to tell you. Now, I know it's a public school and you could do a Freedom of Information request and find out for yourself, but is there a right and wrong when it comes to decision making around positive tests, especially in the offseason and how they're reported?
We don't know yet. I hate defaulting to that. Also, I would add the first thing that Kirby did when he got that job, the very first thing, was use his connections in the state legislature in Georgia to limit Freedom of Information Act as it specifically applies to the university system. So he knew how to close the back door. So it's actually extremely hard to FOIA certain aspects of UGA, even though they are a public institution. It's a little callous the way UGA went about it. I will say this. I've had doctors tell me that, you know, what K-State did might actually be more harmful because then you're creating more ingress and egress and more movement in the population with people who are potentially exposed. Contact tracing and isolation is probably the consensus method of dealing with this that we've seen so far. It even has bipartisan support, so I know it must be I think is smart in some instances, but it does beg the question of inevitably, aren't you just going to create the environment for exposing everyone eventually, which I think is a fair question to ask.
Other than the show cause for Jimbo Fisher, which is a 6-month show cause, I believe. What are they alleging he did? And ultimately, is there anything down the line that will affect Texas A&M?
I'll put it this way. Right before I came on, I saw a prominent Texas A&M blogger, like a fan site, say that they better be cheating harder than this. So it's not we're not talking about dead bodies piled up yet.
Okay.
More than likely, I think it was – I don't know what the actual quote-unquote NCAA crime was.
It was a recruiting contact or something.
Right. No, I'm saying I didn't know what recruit it specifically pertained to. But, yeah, right. It was impermissible contact and frequency, which is honestly one of the most common violations. It's often self-submitted to try and tease down to a level 3. Do you guys remember the Mark Richt butt dial?
Oh, yeah.
I think we did like three stories that year of like why Mark Rick should get a jitterbug. I don't know if you remember those phones for old people. It's incredibly ticky tack. If it was submitted by the school, it would not shock me at all. These things happen. Here's what's interesting to me. We're seeing this happen over and over again. I wrote a lot about David Beatty in Kansas. Nobody particularly in the national side cared because it's Kansas football. Now we're seeing this with Charlie Strong in South Florida. We're seeing this with Brett Bielema, who's with the Patriots right now in Arkansas. A lot of these schools are saying, hey, you violated this or you didn't do this. A lot of these schools are looking at the NCAA to help them void these contracts. Now, I took a very quick look at Jimbo's deal with our editor at Banner Society, Ryan Nanny, who's a lawyer. And unless he shows a major violation as interpreted by the law, which would not be this, or systemic violation over time, he's not going
to trouble. A lot of these schools are looking at the NCAA to help them void these contracts. Now,
getting some feedback there. Godfrey, of just in your conversations with coaches, I'm curious, are you getting the sense that everybody expects college football to take place in the fall? Are you hearing any rumblings about a spring season at all? And because I know the Penn State AD said spring football is a last resort, which I took that to mean they're at least discussing it. What are you hearing on that front in the return to play scenario?
Not everyone is confident, but no one's been completely confident the entire time. I think the numbers right now, because of the demographic shift in the positives, is what is concerning people. Whether you like this or not, whether you agree with it or not, I'm not here to talk to you about mortality rates. I'm not here to talk to you about lasting symptoms or what the permanent effects are or any of that stuff, because I don't know. What I am here to tell you is this. There's a liability involved, and liability is the most important word in college sports. So what they are not thinking with their hearts, and they're really not even thinking with their wallets per se. They're worried about the difference between – we're in voluntary workouts right now, right? So we are in the – we are under the guise, and I'm making some finger quotes if you're listening on the radio, of you can volunteer to come to campus to work out. When that changes to mandatory meetings and your presence is mandatory to retain your scholarship and you potentially put these people at risk, these athletes – that's when liability starts to bloom in the eyes of outside counsel. And if there was an outbreak or an athlete had lasting effects that affected their career or draft stock or something like that, that's what the schools are looking at right now. That's why they're worried.
It's going to be interesting to see how different schools handle it moving forward. When we start to look at these good jobs again in college football, I'm curious about Iowa State and Matt Campbell, and he seems to be the name that whenever a big job is starting to arise, it's always on that top five of who they would go after, who they would look at. Is that one of those jobs like a Kentucky where I think the last time they got to 10 wins was like 2000, 20 years ago, that it can be a sustainable, high quality of life, or is it one of the programs that's never going to pay that much like a Kentucky would to be, you know, a 7 or 8 win team and have long-term viability and stay the coach at a place like that?
The reason why Kentucky is successful, let's be honest, is the SEC's television deal. That's how they can get away with spending so much money on a sport that's secondary, which is sort of an insane thing to say. I don't know if there's another program in the Southeastern Conference where you can say football is secondary, but that's the place. And that's okay, by the way. I'm not denigrating that. To understand one's identity and it be true to life is a wonderful thing to have. And they do. They get it. They understand that 8 or 9 wins should be considered a success without qualification. The problem at Iowa State is that they don't have that. They have the Big 12. You make considerably less money as a participant in the Big 12, especially when you are neither dominant in men's basketball or football as the brand, right? So financially, no, they can't compete. The second issue is this. Kentucky has the SEC brand in recruiting. They have the ability to go into Florida. Obviously, we know here in Nashville that the quality of football goes up year by year. Mark Stoops has made a living in Ohio, which is probably the fourth or fifth best state in the country to recruit. If you're in Iowa and you're the second best team in Iowa, you have to be extremely creative. And so what Campbell has run into is inevitable waxing and waning of talent. You can't keep a loaded, deep Iowa State program, at least not relative to compete with Oklahoma. That's not a reality.
So, announcement coming down earlier today that USC is going to be online classes only this fall, which seriously puts in doubt the fact that USC may not have a football season. It may be one of the first big programs to announce that it's not going to happen this year. Is there a way to continue playing football if your school isn't meeting physically and it's online classes only? How do you think this plays out with USC? And is this a precedent setter, or is this simply a private school making a decision that's not going to fall in line with a lot of other places?
Well, none of these decisions made nationally are going to be congruent. I mean, this is the most fractured sport in America, right? We've talked about this before. There is no commissioner. There is no governing body. If you don't know, I'll say it. I say it every week. The NCAA does not govern college football. That's not how this works. So I'll verify the fact that what USC does has no bearing on Alabama or Penn State. However, it's more about the trend it sets. I think USC being a private institution in the middle of a major city, and I do mean in the middle of the second largest city in America, probably went into those, those were circumstances in their decision making. However, this does not technically prohibit them from having organized events like college football practice. We're now sort of legislating this in the court of public opinion as to whether or not they should. If what they're messaging is that it's not safe to have a math class, why is it safe to have football practice? That's the paradigm that we're operating in right now. That doesn't mean they won't do it. It just means it's a bad look right now.
Maybe pressure is the wrong word here. It might be more of a domino effect. But if USC is announcing the classes that are online only, which they've done, what does that mean for UCLA? What does that mean for, you know, the West Coast in totality? Like, I'm thinking of it from if the University of Tennessee announced that, what that would mean for schools across the entire state to follow suit.
One of the first situations I heard that Birmingham explored was an all SEC season of 10 games. I think somewhere that is on a whiteboard or on an email where they take the conference schedule, they up it, you rotate them out. You would basically go extra cross divisional opponents and then they meet in Atlanta, because the influence here with USC that you're talking about, I'll remind everyone that the Cal State system is already closing in-person school for the fall. That decision was made months ago. All right. That doesn't really affect us because Cal State isn't really notable. Cal State Fullerton is a baseball school I think people have heard of, and that's probably about it. UCLA falls under the University of California system, so that's UCLA and Cal Berkeley. If we were to see a decision there, that's when I believe you would start seeing a stronger influence on the rest of the Pac-12.
So I feel like there are programs this year, Godfrey, that really need a season to happen and need a full season to happen for momentum and for what they could be this season. And there are other programs that would be fine not having the season this year and just continuing on. I think of a South Carolina. I think Will Muschamp would probably be fine not having a college football season this year and just continuing on into the next season. Then I look in the SEC East at a Tennessee, and I think Tennessee's a program that needs this season to happen badly. It needs to show a little bit more progress, even if it's not a lot, to hold on to that recruiting class that they have right now committed for next year. Do you see the dichotomy of programs and maybe deep down what they would like to see happen this year and those that need the season a lot more than other ones?
That's interesting. Finance this season. Okay. They absolutely have to play this season. I was talking to an FCS head coach a couple hours ago, and, they have their one contract, gimme, cupcake, body bag, whatever you want to call it. And that pays for like 40% of their annual budget. One game where they go and lose by 4 touchdowns. So financially, everyone has to cheer for this. Yeah, I guarantee you, if you were to look at the hypothetical hot seat schools right now and said, hey, why don't you get a mulligan this year? They would enjoy it. But I would say this about South Carolina specifically. If we limp along and we have a season and South Carolina is 4-8 or 5-7, how are they going to financially make a move on Will Muschamp? I don't think they can.
Well, and that was going to be sort of my follow-up. How thrilled will Derek Mason be if there's no college football season this year?
I don't think Mason's going to get fired this year or not. honestly. It's funny because I'm kind of percolating on a Vanderbilt.
But it gives him yet another year. I mean, I think if this is a mulligan year and it doesn't happen or there's all these extenuating circumstances, doesn't that add – because I'm with you, Godfrey. I don't think he gets fired either way for anything on the field, but doesn't it add yet another year on top of that, a bonus year if that happens?
Sure, yeah. It's like a stretch year, absolutely. It's what do they call it? What do you call it when you take a year off of college? I don't know. I didn't do it. I just got kicked out. A gap year, yeah.
Isn't that more the case virtually everywhere? I mean, you're less likely to get fired off of this season than probably off of most seasons virtually anywhere.
There's no way I can see buyouts in excess of anything double-digit million being assembled when you also have to go out of the market and hire a coach. I just don't see the big swing buyout happening this season. I'll give you the Mississippi's both as a great example, right? A poor state with a small concentration of money. They both make moves early on in their coach's tenure in Matt Luke and Joe Moorhead to go in and bring in, you know, brand names like Leach and Kiffin. I don't see that happening in 2020. I mean, we're talking about financial effects at the top of the sport. Alabama's going to lose money. Alabama is a money-making machine. So how does that affect as you go down? I mean, the bottom line is somebody in the Sun Belt or the MAC is going to go over, and they're not going to get fired.
Stephen Godfrey joins us, of course, with Banner Society. Happy 4th, man. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll catch up next week.
You too. I'm going to set off fireworks in my backyard, even though I'm not supposed to.
Enjoy. May your neighbors enjoy.
I'm going to find out where Paul lives.
Deep, dark secret.
Good to see you, man. Thank you.
Thanks,
Godfrey.
So a year ago at this time, we were broadcasting live from the Rick Shedden family reunion, the Shedden family reunion, poolside at the estate. Kirby Allen Kirby was with us. If you are a Midday 180 season ticket holder, you know of the eavesdropping segment that Paul was brilliant with in listening to Kirby try to explain something to Rick, the homeowner, that he was doing a fine job in on his own, and that was grilling brats. Coming up, we have that audio of Paul eavesdropping on Kirby Allen Kirby's conversation.
This is fun.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Online, edleysbbq.com. Last year, Rick Shedden stepped up and donated to Team Hutton 104.5 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We broadcasted live from his family reunion. All of the kids in his family, and they all get together, and it all takes place in Gallatin. Well, we were broadcasting live from the Shedden estate, as we like to call it. Great, great guy, great family. Extremely generous and has now become a great friend. And we brought Kirby Allen Kirby along. And this was I feel like we're at the peak of Kirby having a solution to literally every problem. It's always been the case, but Kirby was like on cloud nine that
day. He's on fire.
Because we had already told Rick, hey, let Kirby attempt to go fix your bathroom blinds, because he has these mechanical electric blinds. They wouldn't roll up or down. I can't remember which setting it was on. Turns out, like, Kirby wanted to completely take it off the wall and like rewire it. Turns out it just needed batteries. So this is after that story, and we gave Kirby grief on the air about that. And then during one of the commercial breaks, Paul sees Kirby go over to Rick and kind of stand next to him, and then gets into deep conversation about the brats. And Paul, you overheard him trying to give Rick advice, and there was a great spread of food there. Like he, there was no problem, Chad, with Rick on the grill.
No.
And Paul had the foresight. He was like, you know what? I'm going to go over here and eavesdrop. And you had a little recorder that I believe you held on your shoulder, and yes, you were facing the opposite way.
I may have been facing the same way and just acting like I was like part of the conversation, okay, you know, nodding And or I might have been facing the other way. Either way, I did it in a way that Kirby had no idea that I was recording it.
Right.
I just had to share with you guys the nonsense that was being spewed. And I didn't know how good or bad it was. I wasn't really focused on what he was saying because I was so focused on making sure I was getting a quality recording.
Right. And it's just another example. I don't think the advice was wrong. It's just another example of Kirby having advice for everything as you.
Yeah. And listen to the tone, the yeah. all knowing tone. It's like God speaking to Moses.
Here is Paul eavesdropping on Kirby's conversation with Rick Shedden on Bratz.
You don't necessarily go IPA or anything dark, but you don't want any light beer or anything like that. Budweiser, I think Grohl.
Yeah. Okay.
Pour one of them over those Bratz and don't cover it. Set them in the refrigerator overnight.
All right.
Bring that to a boil. As soon as it gets to a good roaring bubble and the foam starts, and that's the yeast and stuff coming out of the beer.
Oh, yeah.
Turn it off. As soon as that water is still, put it from there on the grill.
Now, how long do they actually cook in the water to boil, or do you have to actually?
It starts
cook them
the middle.
On?
It starts the
good.
Middle
yeah,
and
that's
sets
good.
The casing.
Okay, good.
So then you start grilling them; they won't split.
Good, yeah.
And less likely to split.
Yeah.
You can grill one 15 or 20 minutes. You want a couple minutes on each side, and you okay. do a quarter turn each time right, until you've exactly. gone all the way around. It's ready.
Okay.
There's a portion of the eavesdropping, Paul, as we
See,
listen
I
back
think,
to it.
I think Rick was effectively being us. Like
yes.
just asking the leading
yes.
questions to keep him going with his nonsense. I know everything. And the only way that you could cook a brat. No, that's the yeast coming out there. When that starts bubbling, that's the yeast rising out of the beer. And that's when not 19 minutes and not 21 minutes, but 20 minutes. Precisely.
You mean after you flip them? What do you do after you flip them? I like the follow-up questions. Oh, okay. Yeah. So Also, Kirby starts by saying, you don't want an IPA or any dark beer, which an IPA, by the way, is an India Pale Ale, which is not a dark beer. So he lumped in IPAs with any dark beer. And I know that he's going to say, I'm just saying IPAs and dark beers. No, he was lumping them all in like they're all dark beers.
He uses a Grolsch. He yeah. always has a Grolsch
also,
on hand.
And what really got me laughing listening to that for the first time in a year is Kirby's talking while he has a mouthful of a brat. You can tell he's like chewing the brat as he's discussing how to cook the brat.
A brat, by the way, that was not cooked by his specification. That seems to be just fine.
Yeah, and right? again, Rick had no issue grilling. It was the grilling was phenomenal that day.
Yeah. I had somewhere to be, unfortunately, that afternoon. I think it was a business-related meeting. And you guys got to stay.
Well, they invited us to stay. We're like, okay, we'll stay.
Yeah, we're not coming. We're not leaving.
I
did do some broadcasting from the pool. Chad and I were in. I don't know if you got in during the show or were more duty specific, but it was glorious.
It was an amazing day. And we are going to go back at some point, right, Hutton? Isn't that correct?
Because we would be there today. Today would be the day that we would be back for the family reunion. So we will reschedule, hopefully for later this fall, and we'll schedule a family event around that broadcast. The another memory I have of that show is Paul going around and introducing himself to all of the family members that were there for the pre-family reunion. We were broadcasting the day before everyone got to town, so there were roughly 10 people around the pool for the day before. And Paul was going around introducing himself live on the air, which was comical.
I love walking around with a mic at an event. We had I can't say at an event like that because that's a singular event for us. But I kept saying so. And how do you know our fine host? What's your blood relation to our fine host? That was a marvelous day. And shockingly, the requests for us to come to other pools and family reunions have not poured in the way we expected. We thought that would open the floodgates and we'd be at a pool a week. and here we are sitting at our homes.
I forgot about this. So we were talking about Cameo at one point, right? And that's how we got the great audio. We may have to play later in the show, the great audio, because it was a holiday weekend at the time. I believe it was Memorial Day. where Dan Dockich put us on blast and cut a promo on us from his lake house as he was smoking a stogie and
pimping it up,
enjoying some whiskey. I got with the people at Cameo. They approved our show and all three of us to be on Cameo, and I've not gone through the process. He sent me a link to go through and fill out everything. And I remember the time the whole thing was that you need to take a new picture of yourself. And I've been thinking, I just haven't really had the occasion or time to get someone to take
it
a picture
takes a
of
long
me
time.
That I want on there. So I'm going to need to work on that. But we will be on Cameo. But I just thought about that, Paul, when you said we thought this was going to open up a new market for us with these family reunions. I'm thinking, what if the 180 became sort of the Cameo of live broadcast? Now, bear with me here. As a station, we start to make an effort to see if we can go to these family reunions and different gatherings and parties, and this is a new avenue for revenue. Look, we all have to get creative in these tough economic times, right?
If we I am here to tell you.
Sort of primary income through our station of listeners of the show that will just pay a certain fee, and we come and broadcast an entire show from your house, then maybe this can bridge the gap until the economy's better. Who knows?
Is it a lower fee than the corporate fee?
This could eliminate furloughs moving forward if we can create business this way. Who's with me? Who's with me on this?
Yeah, I'm not raising my hand just yet because the pinnacle of family reunions was the Shedden Estate. The places we would end up, Chad, would not be the Shedden Estate.
I want to go to this dude's fishing, the guy I was talking to about fishing, where I still hope to take Simon, and I want to fish for the show. I have Simon there fishing.
Oh, where were you headed?
Somewhere near Marrowbone Lake.
Okay.
It's a guy that was from the fire station from another live remote that we did. I don't remember where that fire station was, but a very nice invitation. And a picture of his son, younger than Simon, holding up a billion fish.
Chad, just to follow up on your idea, what if we, instead of going to family reunions, we crash weddings?
That's been done.
Well, I mean, we got to get paid. This is what I'm really looking forward to more than anything.
That's been done. Wedding, a radio wedding show to crash his wedding. No. To me, the wedding party would be much better than a family reunion on a Saturday afternoon at, you know, the random park.
Well, what about the pregame for a bachelor or bachelorette party?
Well, Hutton, I'm not trying to typecast us into one type of party, not just a family. I'm saying anything. Like, you could, if a rich person wants to just have us at their house and make us their clown for a day, like, we just do that. I'm saying, if you want me to dress silly and dance a jig at some point, some sort of Irish river dance, I'll do it. Like, whatever it takes.
Dress like the Joker.
Whatever it takes to keep this thing afloat with people that have money out there, if you want to pay for us to come to a live broadcast remote from your house, then we start doing that. Just and no Kirby protocols at all. Like, you just tell it, we're going to broadcast from someone's dungeon. I mean, whatever it is, we just go and broadcast. If whatever reason you want to, bar mitzvahs, a christening, it could be anything, a baptism shower. Whatever you want to have us to your home for, we just go and do it. I'm just using the Shedden family reunion as the example, but certainly weddings and bachelor and bachelorette parties would be in that as well.
I'm sure by the time we come back from commercial, there will be a long list of invites and ideas on our Twitter feed.
So many.
Oh, so many. So very many.
Speaking of lists, Paul, you have something that will lead us into our big topic discussion on myths in sports. We will lead into that with some stats, some crazy stats across sports that are hard to believe.
I didn't bookmark that tweet, so hopefully I sent it to you guys, and I will get it lined up next.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.